It's time to talk Red Sox, and to do that, we welcome in our friend Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Sean, thanks for being with us, and welcome back to New England.
Thanks very much, Rich. Nice to be back here and be back on with you guys.
How were things down in Florida?
Well, it was all quiet until I left, as often is the case. I left Saturday morning, and hours later, the Trevor Story stuff unfolded. But it was kind of interesting just to, you know, first of all, there's a real sense of normalcy again in terms of the atmosphere around the team. The clubhouse is open again, so there's some direct interaction with the players when you speak. It's not via Zoom, which is nice. And it was just a different week because we're used to having about a 10-day or so run-up from players reporting until the game start. And, of course, because of the truncated spring schedule and the lockout that pushed everything back, everybody's doing double time to get ready. So they were playing games 3 or 4 days after walking into camp. That was different, but nice to have baseball back, and the warm weather was nice as well, too.
Sean, do you get the sense that Story was the guy that Heim Bloom wanted all along?
You know, I think that the way Heim operates is that probably evolved quite a bit. I'm sure that Story was a guy who got targeted as someone who might be willing to, at least for this year, move off his regular position. I think it stood to reason, too, that he was probably going to be less expensive than Correa. You know, it depends on when you start the clock, right? Because some of those shortstops signed before the lockout. You go back to Semien and Seager and Baez, all signed back in November and the 1st of December. So there were names coming off the board, but I think Heim is someone who is constantly looking for some market inefficiencies, some bargains and opening, and I think all those things probably led him to Trevor Story.
Well, he put up some impressive numbers in Colorado. You always have to adjust those a little bit, but putting him in the middle of that lineup certainly can't hurt the Red Sox and gives them, I would say, one of the most impressive infields in the entire American League.
Yeah, I think that's especially true if we see the Bobby Dalbec in 2022 that we saw in, say, August and September last year. You know, then you've got four guys across that infield who could hit 25 or more homers. I mean, Dalbec, even with a very inconsistent first half, hit 25 a year ago. So you might expect more from him this year, but in that ballpark, Story should flourish. He's a right-handed pull hitter who gets the ball in the air. And you mentioned the Coors Field effect, which certainly has to be taken into account. And I know there's been a lot of talk about his OPS being, you know, almost 200 points lower away from Coors Field as it was in Denver. But the thing I think we've learned is that while Coors Field can pump up a player's numbers at home, certainly with the thin air and high altitude and the impact it has on balls carrying, it can also have a negative effect to, you know, playing on the road. At Coors Field, you don't have the breaking ball impact that you do in other places. So you get a lot of pitchers going in there, throwing mostly fastballs. And then, you know, you go up on a 9-game road trip to Arizona, L.A., and San Francisco, and all of a sudden you're seeing breaking balls again and having to adjust. So I think the conventional wisdom is that players aren't as good at Coors Field as the numbers suggest, and they're not as bad or don't suffer an actual drop-off or nearly as much of one as we've been led to believe when they go and play elsewhere.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Let's talk about the pitching staff a little bit, and it starts with Chris Sale, who's got this rib cage injury. Are we looking at, about a month, maybe, at the least?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if you saw him before, you know, early to mid-May, and it's conceivable it could linger longer than that. We know that, you know, something in that mid-torso area you have to be very careful with. We've heard about hitters and, you know, obliques and muscle pulls that can get aggravated pretty easily. And when you're talking about, you know, the rotational movement that has to be made by a pitcher, that's something they have to keep an eye on. You know, he talked about 6 to 8 weeks waiting for a bone to heal. Well, but, you know, that happened, I think, on February 24th or so. So 8 weeks out from that is, you know, late April. Mm. And then you've got to build up arm strength again, and then you've got to go out and face hitters in live settings, or certainly in game conditions and rehab appearances like he did in Portland and Worcester last year. So I think it's more likely that we see him toward the end of May, maybe even early June. I could see him missing anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks once the season begins.
Does that give somebody like Garrett Whitlock a chance to move into the rotation for a while?
It certainly opens that opportunity up. I mean, if you start with, you know, Eovaldi and Pivetta and Rich Hill, I think those three guys are kind of locked for the rotation. And I would put Houck maybe ahead of Whitlock because he has started some at the minor, at the major league level. He's made, you know, 10 or 12 starts over the last two seasons. I think if, you know, in a perfect world, even though you would like Whitlock in the big picture and maybe down the road to be able to make the transition into the rotation, there's a benefit to him filling the kind of role that he had last year, especially early in the season. And that's because that even the veterans may not be fully stretched out by the time we get to April 7th. So, you know, maybe Eovaldi and Pivetta and Hill are only giving you, you know, four innings or five and change. It'd be nice to have somebody like Whitlock who twice a week might be able to give you 2 2/3 innings and be that kind of bridge between the starter and your back end guys. So, you know, they've also got Waka in the mix there. So there are some opportunities. They've got some off days early in the season. They're off on the second day of the season, and then after they come back from Detroit. So that allows them to move some guys around. I think a lot's going to depend on, excuse me, what we see over the next 2.5 weeks in spring training and who performs the best.
Last year, Matt Barnes was an all-star closer and then disappeared and was not on the postseason roster for much of the playoffs. Will he be given the opportunity to reclaim that role?
Yeah, I think he'll be given that chance. You know, they extended him at pretty good money. That's the kind of money that you paid for someone to close, which doesn't mean that they're going to determine roles by salary necessarily, but he has been successful in stretches in that ninth inning spot. So I would think they're going to give him every opportunity to reclaim that. There are some other guys that they could take a look at. I think Ryan Brazier is someone who might be an option for the ninth inning if Barnes doesn't reclaim the role. Jake Diekman, the lefty that they signed, is someone who's had some closing experience. There's not an obvious guy here. It's not like they went out and signed Kenley Jansen the way the Braves did, you know, over the weekend. So there's no clear plan B, but I think there are a number of guys that they could mix and match and try in that role. I think the clear preference is to get Barnes straightened out and then send him back to handle most of the save opportunities.
Now that they got the big bat they were looking for in Story, are we likely to see maybe a couple more smaller complementary moves between now and the season opener?
Yeah, I think you could, you know, potentially look at a right-handed hitting outfielder who would, you know, perhaps emerge as a platoon partner in right with Jackie Bradley Jr. You may also see somebody like Rob Refsnyder, who they signed to a minor league contract with an invite to camp, as someone who might get looked at in that role. You know, there's still some trade possibilities. If they were to really get aggressive San Diego's looking to move on from Will Myers, who has $20 million due him in his final year. That's this season. San Diego would be willing to take at least some of that back and to help sweeten the deal, include a prospect, kind of, you know, what happened with, say, the trade last year to get out Adam Ottavino from the Yankees, or even the Renfroe for Bradley deal where the Red Sox took an underperforming Bradley back in his contract but got two pretty good prospects to help offset the money. Myers is a guy that has played some outfield, played some right field, would give them a righty power bat, at least capable of platooning. So there are some trade options. There are some affordable platoon options as free agents. And there are some guys in-house that might get a look.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal, getting us up to speed with what's happening with the Red Sox here. Sean, we appreciate it as always. Thank you for being with us this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you again in a few weeks.
Look forward to it, Rich. Thanks.
Thank you, Sean. Sean McAdam here on Downtown.